Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's March 7th, 2017. Tonight's show will be about food and beer pairings, subtitle Cicerone versus Sommelier. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. So, all right, we got some special guests in the house. Let's go around and everyone introduce themselves and tell us what your qualifications are for being on the show today.
Oh, I get to go first, huh?
Yes, you do, buddy.
Hi, I'm Heather McReynolds. I am the social media correspondent for Guinness. I've been working in the brewing industry for the last 11 million years now.
All right.
Hey, it's Chad Walsh, sommelier at Agern, Nordic restaurant in Grand Central Station.
So he's the sommelier person. All right.
Nice. Hey, guys, this is Chris McClellan. I work as a Guinness Brewery Ambassador and as a certified Cicerone here.
He's the Cicerone. All right.
And my name is Dan Delaney, and I have two restaurants, Delaney Barbecue and Delaney Chicken.
Fried and he's chicken the food barbecue. Guy.
That's
right?
It, yeah.
He's also the guy that doesn't like beer. So, you know, this show came up because for several years we've been hosting an event called Brisket King of NYC. It's coming up April 19th in Brooklyn. And Dan, a few years ago, was our judges champion, which he carried with pride. Yes. He really did. And the time when you came in and did that, suddenly, it was like brisket was really taking off.
You know, it was.
There had been like the old school barbecue in New York, which was like going back to the 90s, and I don't want to name names, but there was an old kind of like imagined Southern barbecue scene.
Sure.
And then, kind of about 5 years ago or so, when you were coming out, Mighty Quinn's Hometown Barbecue,
just around across the whole country, there was a huge pop in barbecue. Just, you know, like before it was cupcakes or whatever, and then barbecue became a thing, and that's everybody just wanted to like eat tons and tons of red meat. I don't know how, maybe this is like has to do with the moon and the stars. I don't know why these things happen, but it did happen, and people went nuts, and we were just, it was like the right place at the right time.
But how did you start? Because I remember you had come up with your own little video series. I know you were definitely interested in food. And when did you start pushing brisket?
You're correct. I was making videos, hundreds of videos about food and traveling the country. That got me down south, got me into Texas, living in Texas, living in New Orleans. And I enjoy eating barbecue, but I love the culture of barbecue. I love like hanging out with these people, watching them, the like gnarly hands, like just reach in and grab embers and just, you know, slap the meat around.
Stub
and they just knew what they, it was.
It's Stubbs barbecue.
Yeah, exactly.
So then I would come up to New York and I would just practice at like some shitty amateur level with like a crappy smoker illegally on my balcony in Brooklyn. And then I would start to do it. And as soon as people stopped getting sick from it, then I would start to invite people over, more people, and do supper clubs and this and that. And then I was down in Texas, got a huge smoker, brought it up to New York City and didn't know what to do. And that's when we started Brisket Lab, which is how we started, you know, the practicing and the learning of making barbecue at a large level.
And that was great. It was educational for many of us. And, dude, it's always great to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure.
And we did a show with Dan last fall where he talked more about his roots and origins. So we're not going to go there today, although we're going to talk a lot with Daniel. So you guys, you know, Cicerone and Sommelier, you know, we're going to talk about brisket and then fried chicken. You give us a little bit of your own backgrounds and about some of your first experiences, kind of like a one-on-one of beer and food or wine and food pairing. Chad, you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in restaurants. My father owned restaurants on the Eastern Shore of Maryland and was in D.C. restaurants before that. I always did it as a kind of means to pay the bills. I was going to college here in New York, working in restaurants. And then I got the wine sort of flipped the switch. I mean, I can remember the moment. It was O2, Monte de Tonnerre, Ravenau, Chablis, which is very expensive now. But I just had this wine, and it like blew out my brain. I mean, it combined everything, wine in general, combined my passion, and which I sort of inherited for the restaurant business, with this sort of narrative form of the story of this wine and the place that it comes from and the person who makes it and why and all these things. So I then got serious about wine and have worked for a bunch of people, Charlie Palmer, Andrew Carmelini, really amazing chefs. And it was there that I sort of got this kind of foundation for wine service, which is really, truly picking the right wine for what's going on the table. What's been really exciting about Agern specifically, it's Nordic food, and at least New Yorkers are a little bit less comfortable with it maybe than going to an Italian restaurant. So they're very trusting. And we sell marginally more white wine by the bottle than red, which is the first time that's even been a contest. And I think that that's because white wine is really appropriate with our food. But it's also because people are trusting us to do it. And our wine pairings typically only have one red wine on it. But they also usually have one or two beers, for the record.
One like kind of 101 wine pairing that you use at your place.
Sure. We do a really... It's sort of so beautiful in its simplicity of a cod. A really, really beautiful small fillet of cod topped with Finnish caviar. And a sauce with, it's basically a butter and fish fumet, sort of classic sort of Frenchish sauce with potato. But we don't waste anything. So the little pretty balls of potato that go in the dish, we fry up what's left of that potato and serve that on the side with dill. And there's like dill on everything.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It's so good. And I just put a sparkling wine on the list, and it's just like the perfect match. Caraccioli. It's a small family estate in Santa Lucia Highlands, so Monterey County, that makes only sparkling wine. It's 09. It has some richness. It's got some leesiness to it. And it just picks up all the elements of that dish, but then having enough acid to sort of like cut through. It's not fatty cod, but, you know, it's got enough acid to stand up to the salinity of the caviar and sort of richness of the sauce.
Yeah, I can see why I'd want white wine with that.
Right, yeah, too. Totally. Yeah. But that's the second to last dish on the savory menu. So yeah, it's tricky because like normally like in the old days you went like sparkling white and then you did like three reds or something.
So this is going to be a good show. We just came off of New York City Beer Week, so you know we went down to Charleston Wine and Food with the whole crew, David and Katie and Kat. So now we're talking about beer and food pairings. All right, and Chris, your background too. You know, you're Cicerone, and you're doing a lot with beer,
yeah,
beer and food.
Absolutely. So what a beer week, huh, Jimmy?
It's pretty awesome, man. You came to New York City Brewer's Choice. Thank you.
We, of course. It was great to be there. It was an honor. So many amazing local breweries, and New York State has, I think, like a quietly booming, you know, beer scene. Most folks across the country don't know how many breweries, close to 300 breweries, right, in New York alone, which is incredible.
It might be like the fourth most in the country, I think, by state.
Yeah, I'm absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a total beer nerd myself. So, my background, I'm actually from Vermont, and I actually had a very similar aha moment to Chad. And one of the reasons I work for Guinness is I had one of my first amazing beers, which turned out to be Guinness Extra Stout, probably longer ago than I care to mention here. It was fantastic. But yeah, I coming out of business school, I actually kind of fell into a job at a local brewery at Magic Hat, which was, one of the original, you know, craft beer, kind of cool, hip craft breweries out there coming out of Burlington in my hometown, and then worked for them for a few years. And since then, I've just kind of been neck deep in the beer industry doing various things, starting my own beer website and finally kind of moving into the brewery ambassador role of Guinness.
Brew Enthusiast, right?
Yeah,
that's
called
a great site.
Yeah, it's called the Brew Enthusiast. Yeah,
it's like I'm supposed to ask you how you can help my life.
Exactly,
you
right?
End it with this, like, we can help you improve your brand. I'm like, you can help my life, Chris.
We can, Jimmy, I can help you. We can help you.
I know you give that confidence off.
Exactly.
Well, if I need help right now, I want to, let's say for the Brisket King event coming up, or even better, you can do brisket or fried chicken. You know, we're going to go to Daniel's Fried Chicken Place. Mm-hmm. What's a good beer pairing for that?
So fried chicken is amazing, right? Like there's very few people.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
we want Daniel to get more into beer.
Here too.
We want him to have more beer at his shack.
So. Exactly. But fried chicken is you know, it's a rich food. You know, mm-hmm. There's a lot of flavor going on there. Obviously the fattiness and some of the saltiness and the, you know, some of the umami flavors from the chicken. And so a beer that would probably contrast with that really nicely, you know, something like a crisp lager would work really well. I think wash away some of the fattiness and kind of, balance out your palate a little bit. A bright crisp lager would work really well. You can also kind of roll with the deep kind of more robust notes of the dish and work with a meatier kind of beer, you know, so a more caramel kind of forward box style beer, even a stout, honestly, would work pretty well depending on the kind of mood you're in. You know?
And Chad, you brought this, what is it, Kent Falls?
Yeah, it's a field beer oat. So everybody hears oats and expects it to be like, well, in the brewing community, not so much, but I think our guests see oat and they think it's going to be like oatmeal or really rich or whatever, but it's actually a really light, very sessionable sour. And we use it as a pairing with a cauliflower dish. So it's a sauce made with cauliflower and a really stinky cheese, actually from Vermont, Jasper Hills Creamery.
Oh, Moses they're amazing. Lever,
really good cheese.
Yeah.
And some black trumpet mushrooms and then this smoked hay cream. And the acid sort of really works with all those funky flavors. But I think it would be great with fried chicken, for the record. Even though I typically drink champagne with fried chicken. I mean, I'm just saying.
It's true. The amount of... That's a huge thing. It also reminded me when we were crafting the menu for wine over at Brisket Town. I think that we only had two reds or three reds. It was almost all white wine. And it was weird because it's interesting because there's always the fight that people have, which is the fact that most people, myself included, we don't really have a huge knowledge. And so we come in with this idea that, well, if it's red meat, you drink red wine, or if it's, you know, whatever. And so it was always a kind of an interesting and fun uphill battle to get people to drink what we thought that they should drink with barbecue, which was almost always acidic wines.
Yeah, but you're right. This Kent Falls, the field beer of field beer oat. I thought it was going to be field of dreams oat next time, but field beer oat.
If you brew it,
they will drink it.
They will drink it.
But I think this would be great with your fried chicken too,
certainly.
Daniel.
Certainly.
And then Heather, and I was going to say, guys, if you want to say something, say it into the mic.
All right.
Oh, so you're already chirping in.
No, I was just laughing along.
You can laugh into the mic.
I still am.
Our listeners want to hear your voice.
I got to come do some chicken and champagne.
And you've had some great beer and food pairing moments in your life.
Let's see.
Because we've had you on a lot. We know how you're starting.
Oh man,
out.
No, I don't know that I can pick one. Man, there's been. No, I don't know that I can pick one. There's so many.
David, do the buzzer. She's out.
I like that we teed up the show though with like a Cicerone versus sommelier kind of thing.
He's kicking your butt.
But it's funny though because like I was thinking about what we were saying about red meat and it's like. We have one of the few red meat dishes on our menu is a beef heart, and it's like a tartare of beef heart. It's like it's as red as red meat gets. I mean, it's the heart of this cow, and we pair it with beer. Usually, we pair it with a goza. Usually, the Geyser Goza from Two Evil, which is like salty and it's got this Icelandic connection, which is super fun, even though it's brewed in Connecticut. But you know, I also pair it with Riesling because Riesling has that minerality to stand up to that intense beefiness of the dish. I mean, but so I think like my least favorite thing, and this used to happen to me when I was at the Dutch for a long time. We had a big raw bar, and I would approach the table, and a guy would say, "Hey, so we're getting the Prince platter, which is like a three-tiered seafood extravaganza," and they'd be like, "Which of these Cabernets do you think should go with it?" And it's like, this one, but we need to decant it, and I think you guys should have some beers first, you know, and that would like be able to we'd actually be able to deliver them an experience
so
that was from
you'd
a flavor
standpoint
pretty
no.
good. No, I can't say no.
And you're really part of you as a sommelier in the traditional sense is you're picking wines, you're working with the chefs, but you're also interacting with the customers.
Well, I think the hardest part about being a somm to a certain extent is being comfortable saying the same things over and over again, but still saying it with enthusiasm and with excitement. And I'm sure that's true in the beer world too, like especially if you're like pouring it at tasting or anything like that. I mean, I end up recommending a lot of the same wines because I really know that they're perfect for that moment. But saying that differently to each table and making people feel that I'm enthusiastic about it and not just some sort of robot sommelier. I mean, otherwise I could just like Skype in from home in my underpants
and
or something,
do,
right?
Like, yeah, you do. You end up having those conversations and you forget that most people are interested, right? But most people are on the same page in terms of what they might know or not know about a certain dish or a certain flavor pairing or something like that.
And you Chris,
know?
You just opened what, an Irish wheat?
Yeah, so we, Jimmy, so we just opened Guinness Irish Wheat. So this is actually coming out very shortly here in the spring from the Guinness Brewery.
I was going to say, this is not available right now, right?
This is going to be available really shortly.
Okay,
yep,
cool.
Yep, and this is actually...
Is that the official... When will it be available?
It's coming this spring.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is the first time that Guinness has brought a wheat beer over. This is brewed over in Dublin. This is the first time we brought a wheat beer over here to the States. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time we've made a beer on this scale with 100% Irish wheat. Wow. So we actually worked with our growers and our farmers to to help cultivate this and malt this properly.
Daniel, can you see this going with your fried chicken?
To get this done.
Certainly. I mean, but this is just, is this a normal thing for Guinness? Because I don't, like, this feels to me like, I don't know, it feels like this craft endeavor, and I don't always associate, like, the name Guinness, it seems like such a huge...
Well, so that's the thing. So I think everybody thinks of Guinness Stout.
Right,
and
yeah.
The beer you know as Guinness Stout has only been available since 1959. Uh-huh. Like, Guinness is 258 years old now. So, like, that's a very small portion of what we have ever brewed in our life.
And so to your question, though, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we work on as an ambassador for Guinness, you know, I'm a massive beer fan. You know, I love the industry. And so it's great to talk about this. But they're a brewery, you know, and they've made a lot of great beer over the years. Mm-hmm. And so the current, you know, sort of look and feel of Guinness is very much as a brewer, you know, as somebody who is innovating and creating all these great new beers. And so we hope, and we're really proud to share a lot of these, you know, out with the general audience. And we hope that we do kind of hit a good note, you know, yeah, with a lot of people in terms
but
of what we got
that's
going on.
Question. Daniel's our like kind of ace in the hole. He's innocent about beer and he's asking the best questions.
Yeah. No, yeah. It is
you
a great
always
question.
Do, man.
Yeah. It is. It's a great question.
But how about this with fried chicken? Chad, you know, you're the wine guy, but for beer.
Yeah, no, I'm into it. I mean, I think, like, we served a lot of fried chicken at the Dutch. That was kind of, like, something we did there. And beer was always, like, a very close runner-up to champagne and also much more affordable. So,
like that we're running on the champagne.
Well, I mean, it's good. What can you say? But
can we get a couple bottles of champagne in there?
I would have brought some, but I was like, this is a beer show. I'm bringing a beer.
I think we're drinking the champagne and beer right now. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, join heritageradionetwork.org. We were down in Charleston Wine and Food, and New York City Beer Week just happened. Right now we're talking about Brisket King at NYC, April 19th. And we're tasting different beers, talking about what would go with fried chicken. Later we'll move on to brisket. But, Dan, so we have the Guinness Wheat, and you say he's a dissenter.
Yeah, I actually don't think it's the right fit for a fried chicken.
Okay. Fair enough.
Only
fair
because,
enough.
Like, at least what we do, it's so rich. We have so much fat as sort of like the flavor. And then we have mayo because it's a sandwich. So we have fat and mayo.
I think you're making a good point here because I kind of forgot your sandwich style. What I was thinking fried chicken of Andrew Carmelini's hot fried chicken, which is more of a super spicy, like lots of like spiced in the
yeah,
crust.
Like Nashville style.
Yeah, and I like the kind of fruitiness of it with that. But you're right. This might be a little flat with mayonnaise.
Yeah.
But then I wanted to ask you, I was reading about your recipe for your fried chicken. What's so special about it? It's wet.
Everything.
You know, tell us. I want to hear your recipe.
What's not special?
The biggest thing I want to know his recipe.
Different about it is that I think that most fried chicken places that we know of, either that are chains or even in New York City, are Southern fried chicken, use a dry dredge where they're tossing the chicken in flour and then they're dunking that into oil. And we don't do that. We basically put a batter, almost like pancake batter, on the chicken, and then that's what goes into the hot oil. And the resulting texture is very different. It's kind of a little bit more like tempura. Like you get this, we put some secret things in the batter so that when it hits the oil, there's a a reaction which creates all these craters and nooks and crannies, and when you bite into it, it's very, very pleasurable. Yeah.
How do we not have any fried chicken?
I know, what's going on? Chris and I are starving.
We're like slobbering on the mics.
Totally fat, right?
That's for after, guys. Yeah. So that recipe, so like one thing with chicken, brining it, you know, sometimes I feel like with dark meat, when you fry it, it doesn't...
Which is all we use.
Yeah, but why don't you like confit it first or something? I know in some Asian cultures they confit
so
chicken
actually,
wings first.
This has been a big change, but now we sous vide all of our chicken first.
Whoa.
Yeah, so we don't, we actually
the molecular
don't.
Molecular gastronomic yeah, exactly. Fried chicken.
We sous vide all of the chicken before we batter it and fry
Breaking
it.
News.
Yeah, and this is only a change, it's only about 2 weeks old that we've started to do this.
I learned it from Chef King Fajanagong, who has Kuma Inn. Mm-hmm. That's how he cooks his wings. He first kind of confits them mm-hmm. and fries them to order.
Does that bring them to temperature, like the right internal temperature?
Well,
is that
no.
the deal?
Well, I would say, you tell me what you think. To me, it actually cooks through the... I mean, dark meat takes longer to cook, and you don't want to bite into a fried chicken leg and have it still like kind of... It should fall off the bone. That's what
yeah,
I think.
It's like it can be too sinewy. Like, yeah. You could get those like...
It's not cooked through.
Bits. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's, I mean, for us, it's a few things. Number one, ultimately, it's a fast food restaurant. I mean, we do an order every 10 seconds, so we need to move faster. So by sous vide-ing it ahead of time, it's only about a minute and 10 seconds in the fryer versus the 7 minutes when it's raw. So part of it is utility, but it's a much better product. Like the chicken is uniformly juicy, and to Chad's point, like we definitely break down some of the like gnarly bits that are there, and they become much more tender. So it's a win across the board.
That's great. So now we've,
that's a technical term, by the way. Gnarly bits. You don't want the gnarly bits.
With our food pairings, we just kind of going further down the tunnel. So we know that it's dark meat. There's sous vide. There might be mayo in the finish. And
we use Duke's mayo from North Carolina and homemade pickles and some Crystal hot sauce and it's a squishy white bun. Which is butter grilled, so it's like fat upon fat upon fat. And the only acid is really coming from a little bit from the pickles and from that hot sauce. It's balanced well as a sandwich, but definitely something that's acidic or that sort of has like a cleansing quality would be appropriate in terms of a drink.
Great. So what should we serve, Chad?
Am I allowed to say champagne again? No, that's like 86 champagne. Okay, we're out of champagne.
It's the only card you brought today, the champagne card. You know,
it works for every. No, I mean, I think like if you go,
if
I
you read about
Riesling,
Chad, he's
going to
tell you to everything. His fallback is pink champagne.
Yeah, pink champagne's great. It's got a little tannic structure.
That was the biggest
know?
Barbecue seller,
of course.
Pink champagne.
I mean,
it's rosé. Whatever.
We can call it pink here. It's a beer show.
So you guys don't need jobs anymore. So the death of sommelier. Is I read about it was last winter. It's like, well, everyone can order rosé and everyone can order sparkling. That's and it. If you guys order sparkling rosé, you don't need a sommelier anymore.
Yeah, that's just order sparkling. The only problem is it's very expensive.
And I mean, to his point, like it, that's why beer does really well with so many mm-hmm. foods is that it's the carbonation. People don't get like the carbonation just gets all of that fat, and you, Daniel, were just saying like layers and layers and layers.
Let's
and layers
let's
of
taste
fat.
This beer.
Like, you need
and
that
see
carb.
If it would go with Daniel's fried chicken.
What do you
sous vide, fatty, buttermilk?
What is
something.
The type of beer that has the most like scrubbing bubbles kind of effect on your tongue?
Typically, it might be wheat beers. Wheat beers, Belgian beers are highly carbonated, so those are typically the styles that you'd want.
But I might go to like legit sours again. Like, I do love Goza and that sort of stuff in those situations, just because they do have less the intense carbonation, but more the intense acid quality.
But here's the challenge, right? So this is a conversation among people that care. That give a shit about beer and they're interested in learning more. What do you do in an application where people are placing an order for food every 10 seconds or 15 seconds and they want comfort and they want familiarity and they're not really interested in having an education?
Pilsner.
That's it.
Well, yeah, that's a real challenge.
I tend to agree with that. You know, I think that food and beer, food and wine, you know, that it's always up for a discussion, you know, and if you add the right context, and I think, Chad, you could probably speak to this, like if you add the right context to anything, you know, it can start to make sense, you know. But I think that in the case of fried chicken, it's like a bit of a unique case in that it's such a big you know, there's so much going on there, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of the fatty.
And I know what you're saying. It's about choices. So if we're talking about like fast casual, which seems to be where a lot of people are going.
Right.
Like if I go to Shake Shack in Madison Square Park and I have my burger, mm-hmm. I'm either thinking wine or beer. And they have a red wine. I just want the red wine. Mm-hmm. And then I have or a beer. Right. And I don't really get into deciding which type or even getting to ask that question. Is that what you would agree with?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, generally speaking, when you think of kind of the faster foods, you know, the chickens and the burgers and things of the world, it's traditionally beer's territory, right? You know, you say, oh, I'll have a beer with that, burger and a beer, fried chicken and a beer, you know, things like that. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. And I think the carbonation has a big, you know, a big part of that. But there's also, there's, you know, when you're, if you're in Madison Square Park, you don't really have a lot of choices, you know, but I think that a very light, you know, flavorful, crisp, but very highly carbonated beverage kind of works.
I'll give them a shot. I think that Shake Shack, the way they've handled their beverages, you get in a burger, I can get a red wine, I'll go with the red wine or I'll get a beer.
I think that's like a tricky, I mean, and you know, Agern is part of a big project in Grand Central, and we have this great Northern Food Hall. So we do actually, QSR is the fancy word, quick mm-hmm. service restaurant. But, and one thing that you have to think about is, I think of, okay, what do I want to drink with this? It's going to be like a really light red. It's going to be like a Beaujolais, like Gamay, Pinot Noir mm-hmm. kind of vibe. But a lot of people who are ordering red wine in that context do not want that wine, right? That's what I would order if I was ordering red wine at a quick service restaurant. But I would never order red wine at a quick service restaurant, right? I would order a beer or maybe a sparkling wine or something.
Right, right.
So you have to kind of like take the audience into consideration and find maybe something that's a little fuller bodied because that's a little bit more of a popular style, and then figure out which one is going to work with the food.
When we opened the chicken place, we were doing just that. We were bringing in these light Trollingers. We were bringing in rosés and like these fruity Gamays and such, and nobody cared. Like, it was just the barrier of education was way too high for anybody to buy into it.
And you had 10 seconds, like, you know.
And that was it.
There wasn't any time.
So what do they buy when they're getting their chicken?
So we dropped wine entirely, and actually we went with just one brewery. And we have like five beers from one brewery.
So which one's that?
It's a Bita. We went with a Bita because the original recipe for the fried chicken is coming from Louisiana, or the style. So that we thought that was appropriate. I love their amber. It's like, that's my Budweiser. That's like the beer that I want to drink when I don't want to think about beer.
It's my Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
So that's what we went with. But we might actually drop alcohol in general. Maybe. So we'll see.
All right. So, Chris, what beer did you pour for us?
Yeah. So we just actually poured the Guinness Antwerpen Stout. So this actually came out in September, October last year. And this is the first time we brought this beer over. Oddly, this is not not an original recipe beer. So we actually have been making this beer since 1944.
Throwback.
Yeah, exactly, right? This is rebranded as Antwerpen, but it's foreign export stout over in Europe. And we still sell it to this day to the Port of Antwerp, to the Martin family, the importers of Guinness into Belgium and a lot of continental Europe. And so this is a big 8% beer. It's definitely...
I was going to say that. The ABV seems like strikingly
high. There's some heat on this beer. There's a great espresso note, good chocolate
note. I could drink this
with
fried chicken.
Yeah.
So am I crazy? Is there some grape kind of thing? Mm.
There could be. I think you're one of the first people I've heard say that, but
I get that kind of like a Muscat kind of grapiness or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really actually there's a big ester note to this.
Chris, you know, this
beer,
is a pretty professional panel you're sitting on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's some flavors. The great thing is you can pull flavors, you know, out of anywhere depending on who you are. But there's a really good, you know, and I say that with all seriousness too. Is like, you know, depending on who you are and what you're drinking,
it's funny. Like I could drink this with fried chicken, your fried chicken. But you know, so there's one thing that I learned about Guinness Foreign Export Stout. I was amazed that was the drink of choice in like Jamaica and the Caribbean.
So that's a little bit different. That's for an extra stout.
Yeah, but for an extra stout, which is also stronger.
It is, yep.
But it's like warm climate. Why are people in a warm climate drinking a strong beer?
So these beers were some of the first beers that were brewed. For an extra stout is actually our oldest recipe. It dates back to a recipe from 1801. From the Guinness Brewery, and so those particular beers were actually brewed for export. They were brewed to be sent overseas, and so they're big, they're hoppy, right? The hops are a big preservative, and that was mainly the point of the hops in those particular beers, you know, back in the early 19th century. So since then, though, you know, those cultures were kind of weaned on that kind of beer, and it does not really make sense in your head. You know, you think about hot, you know, no, Caribbean culture.
Right, tell us, Heather.
But
as someone from Florida, born and raised Florida, listen, it's always hot. When I want to drink a stout, I want to drink a stout. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's fine. It's you northerners that get stuck on this season.
I got to say, though, I'd rather have this with brisket than fried chicken.
Dropped.
Just saying.
This beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of these bigger beers can be a little intimidating to some, you know, I think beer drinkers who kind of go for the lighter lagers, the ones who just say, just give me a beer with my chicken. But the bigger beers, you know, the higher ABV beers, the ones that have a lot of flavor, this particular beer has, like I said, a good chocolate kind of note to it as well. They can be a perfect complement to the bigger flavored foods.
I want it as an affogato or something.
Yeah.
I want this as dessert.
This is actually a beer I would usually pair with like a really, really nice chocolate cake, mm-hmm. you know, something, some sort of chocolate dessert that would complement that.
And then quick, smoothness. Before we lose this beer, Chad, so I agree with you. So tell me why this porter would go well with brisket.
Well, I mean, it depends on how the brisket's prepared and the spice factor and all that. But I mean, I think obviously the ABV helps with the intenseness of any, you know, heavier dish. There's, you know, brisket is like a, you know, you don't check your cell phone when you're eating brisket, right? Like you are focused on that. Your hands are dirty, and you want a beer that has like the presence to stand up to it. And I think alcohol is a factor in that. And then, you know, just depending on the sauce or lack thereof. I think that sort of like chocolate caramel kind of coffee quality can actually be really nice with those things.
And a beer with less flavor would honestly just kind of wash away.
Yeah. You wouldn't feel it.
You would only feel the cold.
I agree with Daniel. Like I can see this to me also. Yeah. It's a little bigger beer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's grape, maybe it's raisiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an overripeness that I would like some chocolate with this, a biscotti or something.
So, but Chad, are you arguing in? Only because I don't know anything. Are you arguing that the higher alcohol content is good because it cuts through the fat, or it's good because you just stop caring sooner?
It's the former. I think it is actually just a better. It's got the intensity on your palate, and I think that like brisket. Your brisket's amazing. But thank brisket you. Is salty, uh-huh. It's fatty,
yep.
You know, it's all of these things. And body of whatever you're having is going to be important there. I mean, you want something with some sort of intensity to it. And, you know, ABV is one way of getting that.
We're knocking over beers.
It's getting sloppy in the studio here.
But I brought the next beer that we're tasting, which is another dark beer. That I use with dessert, and it's something that I've been reaching for a lot is dessert beer, because of the pairing format and And so this is from Grimm. They're super cool, like sort of gypsy brewers, and this is their Sumi Zest. They started with a beer called Sumi Ink, which was a dark beer, and then they added citrus to it, which is a citrus imperial stout, if you will. And what I think is fun, and what you're saying about dessert pairings, is that Both the Guinness Export Stout and this brings something to a dessert that wasn't there before, you know. And we work with a lot of like vegetables in our pastry department. We work with a lot of like sort of more savory expressions. So it's really fun to bring something that has some sweetness and some fruit to the pairing.
Yeah, you know? And I also think that the cool thing about and the best thing about food and beer pairings and food and wine is that. The contrast, right? So you sit there, and so to Chad's point, you can kind of, you taste something, you have a bite of the affogato, you have a bite of the, you know, the whatever it is, the cannoli, the dessert, and then you have a sip of the wine, a sip of the beer, and you realize that there were flavors in that other one that just weren't there because you weren't looking for them. But in comparison, when something is sitting next to it, right, you really start to blow up one side or the other. You know, you start to blow up the savory or the sweet.
I think we're talking a lot about flavor, but there's also, for this specifically, there's like a texture that's pretty remarkable. It's like completely velvety and it has effervescence that's like super tight, like these teeny, teeny little bubbles. And that to me doesn't make it as aggressive of a thing to drink. It's kind of a smoother, it feels like the end. It's the finish line.
Texture to me is like the one thing that like people don't understand with mm-hmm. pairings. I mean, like, and it's something that I use so often. And I go back to that beef heart thing we were talking about. It's got like raw dill on top of it, and like these really crispy salsify thing. Salsify is like a root vegetable that is like almost like potato chips, but they're really skinny. And when you're eating it, I mean, it's not unpleasant, but there's like a dryness factor, right? And when you have a beer with it, the way that it coats your mouth and the texture of the beer on your palate with those things is just what makes it work. And it's less about flavor and more about texture.
Wow, man, this is going. I want to ask Danny when we come back about what his beef heart recipe would be. But we're taking a short break back on Beer Assassins Radio. All right, woo, woo, woo. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, join heritageradionetwork.org. Memberships, businesses, and individuals, and good listeners from Sweden to England to Michigan. Michigan always comes up because it's a cool place. And out there, Chris, they had Bell's from Kalamazoo. Yep, what was the beer that you liked?
I just had the Golden Rye earlier
Smitten.
Today. It's called Smitten, right?
And what did you like about it? Because you really remarked on it.
Yeah, so that kind of a beer, the use of rye is it's pretty pervasive, but you actually don't see it very often. So in the brewing industry. And so that particular beer had a really nice kind of peppery finish to it. And it's unique. You know, when you use a rye malt inside the beer, you get the nice fruitiness at the beginning, but then it just kind of washes
cool
away.
Part of what we do.
A pain in the
Tuesdays,
ass to make
5 o'clock, you catch us sitting at the bar at Roberta's, and the guy who's a bartender on Tuesdays from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Amazing. Right.
What's his name?
Andrew.
All right, Andrew.
Pouring a perfect Bell's.
Jack keeps talking about this amazing pairing that is at his spot where there's a beef heart. And, you know, I know Daniel's making fried chicken, but for me, he's a beef brisket expert that I always look to. You know, what would you do with a beef heart? As a barbecue guy or a southern guy?
You know, I think that more than those two guys, I'm like a tinkerer kind of guy. That's how we got into barbecue. And towards the end of like these last few years, we've been doing more and more sous vide, more and more, you know, parsing together different techniques. And I think that a protein that has so much iron and has sort of like this sort of deeper rich texture might actually do well that way, where you braise it or something like this to kind of let it you know sort of break down and have this wonderful sort of very sumptuous and rich texture. And then if we were to introduce smoke, one of the things that we started to do towards the end was actually introduce smoke to things by first smoking different fats and then finishing things, letting things get a final texture the way that you'd see, or with fat that has smoke. And I think that might be a great way to introduce a smoke flavor. I don't see throwing hearts in the smoker to be very successful.
Would you sous vide the beef heart first?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, he's right on. I mean, we brine it and then quickly sear it, but sear it to like a very, very hard rare. So, I mean, you know, it's the basically same idea, which is to slowly break down the heart and then give it a little fire just for flavor, or smoke would probably work there, but you got to break it down first. It's,
right.
It's a muscle, and it's the hardest working muscle.
Yeah, it works pretty hard too, right?
And then Daniel, about, you know, brisket versus, you know, pastrami, that cut of beef, tell us what the cut of beef is that everyone uses. But there's so many incarnations: corned beef, pastrami, smoked brisket.
I mean, the thing, they're all very interrelated, right? Like all of the tech, all of whether it's the German Czech brisket that you'll find out in Texas or the German sort of Jewish brisket that you'll find in New York, it's all coming from these original ancestral modes of preservation. Meat was going bad; they needed to save it. They smoked it, they cured it, they pickled it, whatever they had to do to make it not turn into garbage, because that luxury didn't exist. Landfills were not an option for meat that was salvageable. So really, today you go to Katz's or you go down to Franklin or whatever, like, and they seem worlds apart, but historically the function was very much the same. All of those old meat shops in Texas were just, they couldn't, nobody wanted to buy the cut that took that many hours, so they went around back and they just looked at old German techniques of how they smoked food and what was coming up through the Caribbean, and they said, well, let's dig a pit and smoke this stuff as a way to not let it go bad. And and the techniques of brining and then steaming and smoking and steaming it's essentially the same thing, but just a different region. A lot of it also has to do with land. It had to do with, like, how much space was available to be cooking outdoors versus, you know, what techniques were available in New York City. And you know, I mean, we today operate in this world of opportunity, and every food decision that we make we have no boundaries. We can sous vide. We can do all these bizarre things, but most of the older techniques of food it was survival still. And it is what can we do to find sustenance and
sort of a product of necessity, right?
Yeah,
like what,
yeah.
what we had to do.
But I mean, that's beer too. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is like potable water, right?
God,
like, I mean, you know, it's saisons and stuff. Like, you know, it's that was you just had to have something to drink that was clean.
Is this beer safe to drink? Is that your sense?
Yeah. Beer is very safe to drink.
Yeah. We've checked this one. It's good to go.
So
sampled it.
Chad, one more time. What was the last Grimm we just
drank? Yeah, so this
drank?
Is the Grimm. It's their Imperial Stout. They call it Sumi Zest. They did a beer called Sumi Ink, which refers to a Japanese like style of ink, and they added orange zest to it. It's sort of this is sort of like Sumi version 2.0, I guess, with zest.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about Brazil. So you guys, now I'm going to do the Cicerone versus Sommelier test, and Daniel, in as experiences you've had. So you didn't like a wheat beer with fried chicken. Now we're going to brisket. So guys, we're going to a let's say what? How would you describe your brisket? It's like Texas. It's smoked.
Yes,
smoked flavors.
It's very beefy. Everything about it are when we think about it like. I think about flavors as colors. It's a ton of brown flavors. It's caramel. It's beef. It's fish sauce. It's all of these sort of very dark, rich, nutty flavors.
And I've had it. And the funny thing, you know, like many great chefs and personalities, when you're at an event and Daniel's actually cutting that brisket, it always tastes good, but it tastes even better. So, what is it that you do that no one else does?
You know,
is it the Salt Bay? You guys, have you seen Salt Bay, man?
Did that just come up in this podcast?
Wait. Jimmy knows what Salt Bay is.
I just saw it on Instagram last week.
That's amazing.
It was on Eater. But I can imagine Daniel kind of like flicking his wrist.
Listen, Jimmy, the new hot thing is Malt Bay.
What's that?
Malt Bay. Malt with the sprinkling
your,
the malt.
For your
sprinkling
beer?
The malt.
Heather, it's so new that Heather just invented that. You know?
Yeah.
No. I'm that hip.
You're hip. So guys, so we have the Daniel Meme, you know, special brisket. Okay, let's go with it. Go for it, you guys, at Cicerone and Sommelier.
Yep.
You know, pick a beer or you can talk us into it while you figure it out.
Okay.
What are you looking for in a beer that's gonna go with his dark rich smoked? Special brisket.
So big, powerful flavors, right? These are the big umami flavors that we've been talking about here for 45 minutes. This particular beer is going to need. I'm a particular fan of a contrasting beer in this circumstance, you know. So I think that something like a stout that we talked about earlier would work. You know, there's a lot of complementary kind of things going on in those two, especially the bigness, some of the booziness from the beer can certainly work with some of that smoke and things like that. And there's definitely a smoke note in the Antwerpen stout that we're drinking right now. But I would go with either a more hop forward, you know, kind of pale ale, something that was bright, something that did have that kind of bitter finish. And, you know, the beer's carbonation would kind of cleanse your palate really, really well. So
carbonation, that's what you're talking about.
Well, the carbonation in the beer, every beer has carbonation, you know, but at the end of the day, my preference in this case would be to kind of cleanse, you know, give yourself a reset after a bite, wash something down with a big beer, an IPA, you know, kind of hop forward pale ale, something that would be that would contrast nicely without being overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of on the same page because I was immediately thinking of IPA. No, but I mean, like, I used to just crush IPAs. Just like it was just like my go-to beer. And then, like, as I got a little bit older or whatever, it started to get a little bit exhausting at times to just drink like an 8.5% alcohol IPA. And then the same thing happened to me with Belgian beer, where like before IPAs, I just like couldn't drink anything other than saisons. But the one time I do want to reach for something with that sort of level of intensity is with a hearty food. And I actually was talking to a young Cicerone recently, and he kept talking about, he used the word hazy or haze probably like 6 times in our conversation. And it's definitely a thing that's happening. And you know, Other Half is a great example here. And you go up to Vermont and The Alchemist and all these guys, and it's hitting LA hard right now. Like everybody in the sort of like small canned craft beer scene is doing like a hazy something, and everybody's putting oats in their beers. And but the one time that I do want to reach for those sorts of like hazy, cloudy, super like thick IPAs is with something like hearty, like a brisket. I think that's it's like beautiful because the bitterness and also on top of the bitterness on the palate is the aromatics, which are super and tropical and floral and fun and like.
Daniel, in your time at Brisket Town, what beer do you think went best with your brisket? You can name a brand or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you the beer that we sold the most. The beer that we sold the most, without any question, was Shiner. And that had nothing to... That
David, hit the buzzer, please.
That only... let me ask a question. Was that brand? Only because that I'm was the joking, sort of, not. Like, you know... medium-bodied beer job, available, or was
we
that
had, we had Lone Star, okay. We had Shiner, we had Abita Amber. All three of them are kind of similar in their overall body and such. I think that this is it, and this is it's like again, this comes back to that question about education.
Yeah,
people wanted to eat brisket and drink a Shiner. They built such a brand like
Texas,
around that experience.
Louisiana,
that's what it was about.
Very reminiscent of that place and that time.
Totally.
Yeah,
and, it's part of the archetype of having.
But that goes back. That goes back to German influences. So the Shiner is the Bach. You have the German butchers who became the barbecue guys in Texas, and you had a German style of beer, which actually one of the few places in the country that's making Bach is Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not too many other breweries making regional Bachs.
I just don't know if
it takes too long.
If there was that much thought, I think it was that it felt right. It felt just like the right beer, whether you knew what it was or whatever. I'm just a consumer.
And I think that's at the end of the day, that's the thing with beer and food pairings. Like there's no right or wrong answer.
Sure.
Right.
Well, I didn't know.
And it's just like, is there any like happier feeling than just drinking a nice lighter style beer, you know, whether it's a lager or a pilsner or even Shiner Bock. I mean, it's about refreshment, you know, it doesn't have to be about like what is the exact right pairing for it. It's like what is the exact right pairing for you as a person in this moment.
And bringing that experience, you know, it's like how do I feel right now?
Let's recap what we drank today, because we were all thinking about what we would drink with fried chicken or brisket. So first, Chad, you brought...
We brought Kent Falls. It was the field beer oat. They do a different field beer, I think, every season. This one was made with local oats. They grow their own hops. Really cool up in Kent, Connecticut.
And then Chris, what do we have next?
So we brought two beers today from Guinness, the Guinness Irish Wheat, and we also brought our Guinness Antwerp and Stout.
And then we finished with
the Grimm Sumi Zest Imperial Stout.
And when I think brisket, I think of... beardedness I've done, and I actually more and more I look to Belgium. Mm-hmm. I think of like a Flemish red, something that has body, but cuts.
Brode back with brisket.
I could
get into that.
Nice Westlanders that could work really well. Tartness. The sourness,
But you can't do that. And what is it called? What's the three initials for the quick service stuff?
QSR.
Yeah, I don't know about QSR with Flemish red, but
no, they're not going to handle that.
You know, maybe for an intimate brisket.
Yeah, Grand Cru undraft. I doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That'll be $52 for a draft of beer and.
It's actually, as I'm thinking about this, there's this opportunity.
Daniel, don't give up alcohol at the fried chicken stand.
I've been thinking about it.
That's going to be, we're going to make a mission. That'll be.
Yeah.
But I think that actually there's this opportunity, you know, I think that sometimes the like nerdiness of a beverage can actually be the thing that cripples people from trying it, right? And I think that, you know, as I'm hearing all of this, I'm thinking, oh, maybe we just need to develop a beer with somebody and just call it crispy or like refreshing or something, and cut all of the external.
I mean, that's what Shake Shack did. Shackmeister Ale. I mean, you know, and they crushed that beer for Brooklyn Brewery.
Brooklyn made that, right? Yeah.
Yep.
It can be overwhelming.
We can introduce you to some people.
Beer and wine. Beer and wine is really
Daniel. Once again, the visionary. He's creating some new ideas.
Nailed it.
I thought about that for years too. I've gone to this little place on a Broom and Orchard. It's called like the Dudley. And I'm like, they have like I call it the greatest hits drinks. It's like three cocktails, a red, a white, a sparkling, a couple of beers. And you're like, you know what? That's all I need. And I get the burger.
Right.
And I don't think about it. It tastes really good. I'll get a refill. So kind of what you're saying. It's like the greatest hits, like cut through all the choices and have something that's really good.
Yeah. Because I don't want people to be like afraid of beer and wine. Like they shouldn't, like it should never be intimidating. Like
This is why, to Heather's point there too, this is why the classics always work. You know, this is why you can go in and something like, you know, Guinness Draft or Brooklyn Lager or Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, like these beers that we all cut our teeth on, these beers that we love them because they work. We love them because they
work. We're going to wrap up the show, but as we're planning for it, look ahead, April 19th, it's BrisketKingNYC.com. This year it's benefiting our good buddies at Brooklyn Rescue Mission, which in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, they operate food pantries and you know, a community garden, good buddies. But leading up to that, each one of you to wrap it up, please tell us a favorite beverage and food pairing and go quick with it. Because I have mine right now. Oh, Garrett Oliver's book, it's always the same. Barley wine and Stilton, you have those two together. It's magic in your mouth. Okay, who's next?
My go-to, just a few doors down from Dudley's where you get your hamburger, Stiegel and Schnitzel. They rhyme. They're
What's
delicious.
Stiegel?
Stiegel's an Austrian beer. It's fantastic. It's super lean.
All right, who's
and
next?
Fresh.
That's a good one.
Stout and oysters. Stout and oysters all day. Stout and oysters. Yeah. Stout and oysters.
Which place is Stiegel in?
Cafe Katya. Nice. Orchard Street. Cafe Katya. Go there.
A really good Vermont nutty cheddar. Got to throw it to my homies back in Vermont. And probably a darker beer. Like a really nice kind of dry stout.
Like export stout.
Yeah.
I love just eating like assorted cured meats with super acidic cocktails, actually, would be my favorite thing. So I love like aviations and just things that have a lot of acid, a lot of light.
He's a cocktail
bright
guy. That's what
we figured it out.
Secret cocktail guy.
We're all
and
there.
Our cocktails on draft.
Special friend
so
from Chile.
So we have to convert him.
We met her at the bar at Roberta's. What's your name? She's been sitting at the bar all day waiting for airplane back to Chile.
Yeah, my 15 seconds of fame right now.
Nice.
What's your name?
Natalia. I'm from Chile. And if I had to go for a combination of beer and food, it would be like this Belgian beer that's called Gulden Drak with chocolate.
Gulden Drak. Yeah.
I love it. It's my favorite.
What was the food? What?
Chocolate. Gulden Drak.
Right.
Really simple, but it goes
beautiful,
so well.
Beautiful.
Tell you what, if you come to the bar at Roberta's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, you can come on the show anytime you want.
Yeah.
All right?
Hey, let's do a mead
just
show soon. Too,
long
okay? We got to get the mead in this.
Coming
play,
up
okay?
in April, with and Justin's going to make it happen with Chad and Raphael and some other guys. But mead show. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Chris, Chad, Daniel, Heather, and our friend from Chile for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, intern Hillary Fazen, and our engineer, David Tadisher. We'll see you next time on Beer Assassins Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.